So the Malachim Aleph Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph. This Beisoy Bona Shloimo Shloishes Rashana Veichalas Kol Beisoy. You have it, everybody. Perek Zayin Malachim Aleph Perek Zayin.
Wait, let me get back to.
Okay, do you have it? Yes, do you have it?
Still talk about building. Here.
You don't like building. Beginning of Perek Zayin. Building of the base of Migdash. Ah, should be zeichet to build the base of Migdash.
Imhir
v'aminu. Amen.
Shalom.
Yeah, right here.
Didn't we get to this already?
Yeah, we did the first two psukim, but I just want to do it again, so we have a flow.
All right.
So again, Perek Zayin Pasuk Aleph, V'yis Beisa Bona Shlomi Shloishes Hashona V'yichalas Kol Beisa. So he built his house. It took him 13 years, much basically double than what it took to build the Beis HaMikdash, right? And so it teaches us that he was Nis'atzel, he was lazy, so to speak. He took his time, he wasn't in a hurry, he wasn't in a rush. He took his time to build his own house, right, to show the Chavivus, the special alacrity that he had, building the Beis HaMikdash, that he did it, he built it as fast as he could, but when it came to his own house, he took his time. You have it, Richie?
No. I haven't seen anything here.
Yeah, so we're in Pasuk Beis now. But even as Beis Yar HaLevonai, right, so this parak we're going to describe three structures, three pretty complicated structures that were made by Shlomo. So the first one is Beis Yar HaLevonai. We started to discuss last time. Okay, it was 100 amma long, 50 amma rochbay, 50 ammas wide, 30 amma kimosay, right, 30 ammas high, which is again about 5 stories. Al arba ture amude arozim kruz hasarozim al hamudim. So I think you asked last time. What do we care about this, right? This is personal house, right? So I looked into the Lamar, I saw that we're going to see later on that these structures are all leading up to the Beis HaMikdash. Now the reason why Beis Yar HaLevonai was built over here, right, and wasn't built next to his palace, right? So I saw a pshat that says that this was built also for the Bnei Yisrael. Every time when they would come for the Aliyah LaRegel, they would come up to the Beis HaMikdash. They're obviously, they were traveling in the heat, right? Especially in the summer, right? They're traveling in the heat. It was hot, right? They got there. They're all sweaty, right? It's not proper for them to walk into the Beis HaMikdash when they're all schwitzed, and hot and uncomfortable.
Well, take a shower,
right? So yeah. So you can either you can take a shower. But what Shlomo HaMelech did was he built this Beis Yar HaLevonai. This hall led up to the Beis HaMikdash. Well, and they could walk through, right? So they could walk through, and they could cool down. It was very breezy. There was a cross breeze, and it was very breezy to help them cool down, right, as they approach the Beis HaMikdash. That way, when they can come into the Beis HaMikdash, they're nice and comfortable, they're refreshed, right? And also, it's more honorable, it's more kavodik for the Beis HaMikdash when people walk in and they're not, schwitzy and hot.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's one of the pshatim I saw. So that's why it's built over here. We're going to see later on there's 8 different structures that lead up to the Beis HaMikdash. We'll see exactly what they were. Okay, so these were built. So we've got four rows of arozim. Let's just draw it real quick so we can get a better picture. So we have these arozim that were built like this. Yeah? You have, right? These arozim, these rows of these red columns, right, of cedar trees. Yeah? Yeah, all across. Yeah? So basically, you had, over here, one over here, one over here, and over here, over here, and over here. And the last one over here, and over here. Yeah? So basically it looks like this. You have one row over here, right? A second row going underneath here, a third row over here, and a fourth row all the way at the end. Yeah? And so this held up this
the roof and underneath the
This was the floor, right? So that way you have the wind. These were the pillars that were holding up the floor. Yeah. But
what was under the floor?
It was the ground, right? It was built.
So people walked up here, not on the ground.
Right. They walked up here, but that way you have wind coming underneath the floor, right? So it made it very cool, because you had wind underneath, right? It wasn't connected to the ground. In the summer, the earth gets very hot, right? You don't want it to be close to the ground. You want it to have a breeze under the floor. That way it keeps the whole structure nice and cool.
How high were the beams? I mean, how high were they off the floor?
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. But they were pretty high. You know, they were cedar trees, right? So there was basically a trunk. Each pillar over here is basically a trunk. A trunk of the tree. Yeah?
Yeah.
So it's clear. So you have, basically, because you have... So you have four rows. So it divides up to three parts, right? Under each row. Right? One, two, and three. Right? Right, so you have four rows. One, this is one row. This is the second row, the third row, the fourth row. So it divides up into three parts. So the first part, the second part, and the third part. Yeah. And that's how we laid up these planks of wood.
You're telling me this is not flat?
It was flat, yeah. But meaning when you lay the planks of wood, yeah, from one row of pillars to the other. They don't have to be as long as 100 amas, right? That would be ridiculous, right? 100 amas long.
Oh, so like they were planks put together.
Right, yeah, they were put together. One, two, three. We're going to see, this is only like the length of these planks, but altogether we'll see there were 45 pieces that composed the floor of this structure. Okay?
Was this part of his house?
This wasn't part of his house, no. We're going to see. There's a whole row of structures that led up to his house.
Oh, this is... He's here. Where's the base of Migdash? Up here?
All the way at the end. Meaning
his house is here.
Yeah.
And they were talking about stuff over here behind.
Meaning all the way from his house. He got his house on one end, the base of Migdash to the other. He's got eight different structures leading all the way to the base of Migdash.
Okay.
Yeah? Okay, so this is the Beis Yair HaLevanah. This was a very big structure, very major. Again, it was built to help the people cool down. Okay.
It said its height is 30 cubits.
Yeah, that's talking about the thing, meaning it's not talking about from the ground.
It's talking about what's
the structure itself. Yeah, meaning from the floor till the roof was 30 amas. Which is about five stories. That's pretty high, right? And there were windows. So let's see. Let's see Pasuk Gimel. Yeah. The cell phone bo'erez mimal al atzloi hasher al amudim. Right? It was...
Here's the floor, right?
Yeah,
now you have whatever you have here. Where are the windows? Up here?
Yeah, the windows are on the walls, yes.
From this side. There's no walls here, right? In the middle. They walk straight through, right?
Right, yeah. But the walls are on the side.
The walls are on the side.
On the side.
On top, it had windows.
Yeah. There are windows in the walls. That way it allowed a cross breeze to go from one end to the other, which again helped the whole building cool down. So Pasuk Gimel explains over here, there were... it was Safon Ba'eres, it was covered in cedar tree, Mimal al Atzlois, right on top of the tzlois, on top of these pillars, Asher al Amudim, Arba'im v'chamisha, right? There were 45 different planks of wood, right? So you have planks, right, of wood that he would lay from one edge of from these pillars all the way to these pillars, right? So, and these all put together all the floor, yeah? One, two, right? So altogether, there were 45 of these that composed the whole floor. Yeah, you see? I said there were pillars that he would use, one, two, three, to lay across from one row of beams to the other, right? And altogether, there were 45 of these planks of wood that put together the floor.
It made that's the floor.
That's the floor, yes.
So still, it wasn't a whole thing.
Right.
They had pieces here, pieces here, pieces yes. there.
Yes, exactly.
It wasn't made one big floor.
Right, okay. Right. Right, it was like a puzzle. Like a puzzle, yeah? 45 pieces in this puzzle.
30 amas was the height?
Yes.
Is that the same? What's the maximum height of a sukkah? Maximum height. How high can the ceiling of a sukkah
20.
Be?
20 amas.
Okay.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with the sukkah. Remember, the base of English itself is also 30 amas high. Right? It was pretty tall. Five stories high. Right, so it's Chamisha Sar Hatur. Mishkufim Shloish Haturim, Pasuk Dalet. There were shkufim means windows. There were three windows. Again, it's divided into three parts. One, two, three. So in each one of these parts, right, there were three windows on each side. Three windows over here, three windows over here. Yeah? Yeah, how do you see? Again, there's one, two, three. Yeah? So in each part, there were three windows on this side, three windows on this side. Another three on this side, another three on this side. Another three over here, and another three over here.
So it was 18 windows.
Yeah, altogether. Yeah? Umechazeh el mechazeh, they were facing each other, right? Meaning they were designed to face exactly, you know, where you had one window on one end, yeah? It was exactly the same place on this wall, right? So you had this, shloi shalosh ba'amim, three times. One, two, three.
Yeah.
Yeah? So altogether you had 18 windows. Therefore, that made a very, very convenient and cooling cross breeze.
So how long was the whole thing from here?
100 amas.
How much?
100 amas.
100 amas.
Yes.
So 33 to 30 for each, for three of them.
Yeah. So 100 amas is about, well, this is the length, right? Yeah. So that's about...
150 feet.
Yeah. It's pretty long. Again, we're talking about masses and masses of people coming to the Beis Hamikdash, right? It's got to be a structure that can contain such a large amount of people and can cool them down instantaneously all at the same time, right? So it's got to be very, very big, a very massive and impressive structure that'll be effective at its job. Okay? V'chol pasakei, v'chol psachim v'amezuzos revuim shokef. All the openings are, all the doors, all the windows are square. Right, they're all square. Umul mechazel mechazel shalosh pa'amim. And so you had three windows in each part times three. Yeah. Right, so you get 3 times 3 is 9 on each side. Vesulam ha'amudim, pasuk vav, vesulam ha'amudim osa 50 amo arkoi, u'shloishim amo rochboi. So now we're talking about a separate structure, which is called ulam ha'amudim. Yeah? Ulam ha'amudim came after the Beis Yair HaLevanim. So it started off like this. The order of the structures was as follows. Yeah, the Beis HaMelech, the palace of the king of Shlomai. After Beis HaMelech, you had a Chotzer Gedolah, a very large courtyard. Right? After this large courtyard was this Beis Yair HaLevanim, which Shlomai used to take the other kings to go and cool down if it happened to be a hot day. So you had his house, you had a large courtyard for them to walk around. If it still was not cool enough to walk around in the courtyard, he would take them all the way to the third structure, which was Beis Yair Levanon, what we just described. After Beis Yair Levanon comes Ulam HaMudim, which is described over here in Pasuk Vav, which is 50 amas long and 30 amas wide, which is very similar to Beis Yair Levanon, just half the size. And after that was another hall that, again, led to the Beis HaMikdash. And then we have Ve'amudim al Paneihem, which is described at the end of Pasuk Vav, which was, a bunch of pillars that led to the Beis HaMikdash. Then we had Kisei HaMishpat. Kisei HaMishpat was where Shlomo HaMelech himself, right, went to judge in very, very large, very, very significant court cases. For example, the court cases that we saw previously with the two women who came to Shlomo HaMelech and they appeared to him. He didn't accept them at his throne, in his palace. Rather, he accepted them in Kisei HaMishpat, which was another hall, on the way to the Beis HaMikdash, where he himself sat and dealt with these court cases. And then the last structure, and these eight structures, was Ulam HaMishpat. Ulam HaMishpat was where the Sanhedrin sat. As we saw last week, let's just see it again real quick. Ulam HaMishpat was the last structure, is also known in the Gemara as Lishkas HaGazis. That is the last and final structure that led to the Beis HaMikdash. Here, so over here you can see what we described as Amudim al Paneihem. Yeah, we've seen that, and the Pasuk Vav, we had these pillars. These pillars is the way to the Beis HaMikdash. It's not the Beis HaMikdash itself, but it's one of the structures on the way. One of the eight structures that was leading to the Beis HaMikdash.
But this is only way to go to the temple through the eight structure?
Yes.
There is no anything else?
No.
It seems that he made the Beis HaMikdash. He finished it, but they didn't do nothing yet because he didn't have all these other structures that were before him to get them ready. That's what it seems like. First he made the Beis HaMikdash, he said. But there was no places for the people to rest and everything else until he made his house and then he made the other stuff.
Right, it's a good question. I don't know exactly when the Beis HaMikdash was active. And if all these structures were in place as it was active, I'm not sure. It's a good question.
It seems an awful long time. He said it took him 13 years.
Right.
No,
obviously he didn't wait 13 years.
It must have taken him that long to make the other structures.
Yeah, I don't think he let the Beis HaMikdash sit for 13 years until it was active.
I don't think so either. But I mean, it's what it seems like.
Right. Right. That's a good question.
No, but first structure is reasonable because you said it's not too cool.
Yes.
But why need to go through the court? There is nothing.
No, this is all meaning not. These eight structures are the structures that lead from the Beis HaMelech, from the palace of Shlomo all the way to the Beis HaMikdash. But it does not mean that all the people who came to the Beis HaMikdash went through all these eight structures.
But let me ask you, this is another way to go, or this is only way to go to this temple through this structure?
Well, this was the main way. We see, like, if you go to the Old City, you'll see there are a few different gates that have access to the Beis HaMikdash. Right? You have Shar Shechem, you have Shar Yafo, you have Shar Ashbot. I mean, you have different gates that give access to the Beis HaMikdash, but this was the main way when all the Oyla Regalim, when the people would come to celebrate at the Beis HaMikdash, when they would come in, they would go through this way. This was the main way.
The porch of the throne, that he used to judge. Now, that's not in his house. Okay?
No.
That's his office.
Right.
Like he went to work over
right.
there. How
right.
far away was it from his house did he...
Well, there were 6 different structures between him and his house and that. So what was the distance exactly? I don't know. I'm sure he had a limousine or a chopper that took him to work every morning, you know. He didn't walk...
He was busy. He didn't sit in the throne all day. He was out playing golf a little, too.
Of course, I'm sure he had a golf course.
That, you
know, part of his palace.
What I'm just saying, you know, when did he go there?
He didn't go there.
He didn't go there when there was nothing to
right.
do.
Right.
I mean, somebody probably, there was some cases came up,
mm-hmm.
so they had a schedule. Well, right. I'll meet him over there.
Well, Sanhedrin couldn't Paskin.
It had to be a major court case.
It went up from the city courts to Sanhedrin till
right.
you get to the Supreme Court.
Right, exactly. Anything that was too big for the Sanhedrin, he judged. And, again, it wasn't every day. It was only a major, major court case that he dealt with. And that's when he went to the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMishpat, it was called. So let's just see again the picture of the Lishkas HaGazis. Where was it? So here you get a bit of a better idea. This is Bais Sheni. Yeah? This is Bais Sheni. So it's not exactly the same way that was, that you don't really have the 8 structures over here, but you could see how, this is the Beis HaMikdash over here. Right? You could see that there are different entrances. Right? You have the entrance over here. Right? This was the entrance of Shaar Yafo. Sorry, Shaar HaShpot. Right over here, you have this entrance over here, which is Shaar Yafo.
Where was his house?
His house is over here. This is the palace.
And where was the place where they rest, the air business?
Yeah, over here.
Over here?
Yeah.
So,
this is
the rest of the city is over here.
All this stuff here.
I'm not sure what that was. But yeah, I don't know.
It's the restaurants.
Yeah, the restaurants and the mall. Oh. Okay. Let's see the Sanhedrin. Where was that? Here. This was the last structure. It was called Ulam HaMishpat, Lishkas HaGazis. This is where the Sanhedrin sat. And they judged anything, meaning anything that the city courts could not deal with. And if they couldn't deal with it...
That's not in the Beis HaMikdash, right? It's in the front of...
Right, right. It's outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah, yeah.
So the Beis HaMikdash had nothing to do with court cases or anything?
No.
Only holy...
Yes.
What they had to do. The
right.
sacrifices and everything
exactly.
else.
No politics.
Otherwise, keep out.
Right. Right. This is... Before. Yeah. And this is on the way to the Beis HaMikdash. Yeah. This was the last structure on the way to the Beis HaMikdash from the palace. What's called Ulam HaMishpat. Okay. Yeah. Okay, let's see weiter. Pasuk Zayin. V'ulam akise asher yishpacham. Right? Then the seventh structure was ulam akise, which is, again, where he would deal with major court cases. And then ulam mishpat asa. That was the eighth and last structure that was built and led to the base of Megiddo. Safun ba'arez me'akarka adakarka. Right? The whole thing was covered, from beginning to end, was covered with cedar trees. Ubeis ha'yashar yeshiv sham chotzer ha'acheres mi'beis la'ulam k'mais ha'zeh hoyo. Ubeis yas al-bas parash asher lokach shloimoi k'ulam ha'zeh. Yeah, so his house, which is where he sat, was in Chotzer Acheres, Mibais La'ulam. And then he wanted to build the same exact house like he wanted to build the same structure of his own palace for Bas Parai. It was special for Bas Parai. And
he had a separate house?
Yeah, a separate house for her. Apparently she was a very, very,
that's the only way they ought to get into arguments.
I
always said, if you're married, you're better off living in two different places. Not all the time.
Right.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah. Apparently that's...
You don't get into all these jealous nerves.
Right. But it seems like Bas Parai was one of the main wives of Shlomo HaMelech. And
that's another, why he married Bas Parai. What is he telling us here?
Why did he build?
Why should she have a house different than the rest of his wives?
Well, Rashi points out that it was all a beliboy, right? It was a thought that came up in his heart. That's what he wished. Okay. Apparently he loved her very much and he wanted her to have something special. Yeah.
When did he meet this lady?
So the way it worked was anytime he made a peace treaty with a foreign king, the way to solidify the peace agreement was for Shlomo HaMelech to marry the princess. Right, so now they were family.
But she'd have to be Magaya, no?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, she'd have to say okay.
Of course, no. Obviously, she has to convert. But at the end of his life, it sounds like maybe they didn't convert. Belev Shalom, they didn't convert with a full heart. And at the end of their life, it says that they went back to their old ways, and they started worshiping Avodah Zarah. And that's why it says the Shlomo HaMelech was held accountable for his wives worshipping Avodah Zarah. He did not say anything to stop them. He was not Meicha, and therefore he was held accountable. He's taken to task for that. That was something that he definitely did wrong. So it says, when it says in the Pasuk, right, Lo Yarbo Le'Nashim, that a king is not allowed to have too many wives, right, so it gives a reason. What's the reason that he's not allowed to have too many wives? Shaloyu masirois eslibi. They will not influence his heart. They not take over his emotional feelings and convince him to do things that he shouldn't really be doing. So Shlomo HaMelech said, don't worry about it. I'm Shlomo HaMelech, right? I will not be influenced by my wives. So Hashem said, oh yeah? Really? You think you're not going to be influenced by your wives?
I didn't. Didn't Western College say the same thing we learned before? The difference between Abraham and God. I mean, they got influenced by somebody else. Who we learned about that? I mean, I can't remember who we said it about. Remember before, he says, it won't bother me. God said, bad Bathsheba. Remember, he said, David said, Nothing going to bother me. So Hashem said, yeah, we'll see. And right away, he fell in love with Bathsheba. Didn't you we learned that?
Right.
Showed him.
Yeah, the same
you're not vulnerable to that?
Right. Yeah, the Gemara said that he was questioning Hashem. He asked him, why is it that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are mentioned in Shemoneh? That's right. Like Avram, like Yitzchak, like Yaakov. And that was not mentioned, right? So Hashem says, oh, well, they withstood a Nisayon, they withstood a challenge, right? You didn't.
Yeah.
You didn't withstand a challenge. So David Mount says, okay,
hey,
bring it on. I'll deal with the challenge. I'll deal with a Nisayon, no problem.
But here is like father, like son.
Yeah, it's true. The apple didn't fall from the tree. Meaning, well, Shlomo did not exactly, request any Sion, right? David HaMelech openly said, oh, I can deal with any Sion. Bring it to me, right? Shlomo HaMelech was Deirish Tam HaDikra, right? He learned up the reason of the Pasuk, right? And many times the Pasuk does not give a reason for a certain law or a certain decree, because you'll say, oh, if that's the reason, then I don't have to worry about it, right? Because for me, it's not a problem. Right, so that was his mistake. Right, he didn't openly ask for trouble. He thought that he was, so to speak, smarter than what the Pasuk says. There's actually a very interesting Chasam Sofer that brings down many times. Right, when the Pasuk brings a reason, right, for the reason for mitzvahs. Yeah, and we don't understand. Right, many mitzvahs that have a reason. Those reasons don't necessarily apply nowadays. Right, nowadays, because different circumstances, right, technology that's available, right, the reasoning of the Pasuk doesn't necessarily apply. Says the Chasam Sofer, don't be so quick to assume that just because the reason doesn't apply,
that
the mitzvah, right, why not, he says. He said, because many times when Chazal or the Pasuk bring down a reason, it's just one reason of many. There are other reasons that are not suggested, that are not brought down in Chazal, or in the Pasuk, or in the Medrash, or in the Gemara. So just because you think, oh, that reason doesn't apply today, doesn't matter, because there are many other reasons that do apply that you don't even know about. Right?
It means we need to perform all mitzvahs.
Exactly.
Even they is not now reasonable.
Yes.
Because we don't need real reasons.
Right, exactly. We don't need reasons. Now, there is a concept of nishtanu atvoim. Right, there is a concept that now, right, many things that are discussed in the Gemara don't necessarily apply today. They don't apply today because of technology that's available. Right, but for that, you need to have real halachic authority to say, okay, that doesn't apply today. Today, the situation is different. I'll give you an example. Right, the Gemara says, there's a very interesting Gemara that talks about a baby that's born during the 8th month of pregnancy. Right? The Gemara says a baby that's born during the 8th month of pregnancy. There's no possible way that he can live. Right? And that has direct halachic ramifications. For example, if that baby is born on Shabbos, we are not allowed to violate Shabbos in order to save that baby if he was born on Shabbos, because he's actually considered to be muktzah. You're not allowed to touch him. He's already, even though now he's alive, but he's considered as if he's already dead, because there's no possible way that he can survive. That's what the Gemara says. Yeah? So nowadays, obviously, we're never going to say that. Nowadays, we have incubators, right? That baby can easily survive, even if he's born the 8th month, 7th month, even 6th month, right?
Six months was all right. Even 7th, but they only said it was only an 8 month.
Right, it was only an 8 month because the lungs are not as developed, whatever.
I mean, it's hard to understand. It's 6 months, okay, but 8 months to this and so.
Right. Okay. So, but again, you need a very strong halachic authority to say, oh, you know what, nowadays the nature is different, and we're not going to assume that this baby is dead, right? We can easily keep him alive, and therefore we'll go ahead and we're going to violate Shabbos in order to save the baby, because he's considered to be alive just like any other baby that's born.
Okay, it means now in our time, try to save baby.
Yes, for sure. So now what we're going to do is we're going to go against that Gemara. The Gemara says that baby's mukta, you're not allowed to violate Shabbos. Nowadays we say no. You are allowed to violate Shabbos, and you do whatever you can to save the baby because the situation is different.
Like, we have the means to do it.
We have the means to do it, right.
Who made this
before decision? They didn't.
Who made this?
Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach speaks about it.
But there is no any discussion from another authority?
Again, you need to have halachic authorities. Reb Shlomo talks about it as well. You need halachic authorities that know how to apply the concepts that halacha is based on and apply them to nowadays situations. Right, you can't just have any Joe Schmo, any rabbi say, oh, you know what, I think that, you know, today the situation is different and now you're allowed to do X, even though in past generations we weren't allowed to. You need to have, just like, you know, there's a very famous bridge that is no longer operative.
Well, when you come down with that, you have to know the reason why an 8 wouldn't survive, whereas 6 it will survive.
Right.
You have to know the reason for it. So maybe when there was no way you could save that baby. Nothing would help.
Right.
Nowadays they have so many things that you save it. You can do it. You do all these other things. Even if something was wrong inside, you can open up the baby and then.
Right.
But then you have to know exactly. You have to go to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just as an analogy, there's a very famous bridge that's not operative anymore, right? And, you know, it's a tourist attraction. So now, obviously, I would bring my kids to look at the bridge and to admire it and how it looks. But I'm never going to cross over it. Right? I'm never actually going to cross over it because it's dangerous. You need someone with that is a certified what's the word? Certified architect to go ahead and apply the principles of architect and say that this bridge is safe to cross over. So when you want to apply one the concepts from previous generations, right, and make a bridge to nowadays generations, you need someone that is that has the authority, that is a certified architect that can go ahead and apply those concepts to today's generation. And obviously, it's not anybody; it's got to be someone that has that authority.
But in Judaism, there is no highest authority. There is no pope, but who knows?
There are gedolim like Ramesh Feinstein or Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others that deal, that deal with these kind of situations. Yeah.
In our time, who is people believe and trust?
Rav Steinman is known to be a great gadol. Rav Avadia Yosef also. Yeah.
I just caught the tail end of this, but I was curious because you were talking specifically about an area of halakha in regards to changes in medicine.
Yes.
So, given like the gravity of like the sanctity of human life in Judaism, is there something set up so that people are aware when like a particular breakthrough comes through that there's people that can get on it right away to look at the halakha involved in that they wouldn't want to wait to have any more of a lag time?
For sure. Yeah, there are institutions that deal with, you know, the technology developments and they deal with them in real time as they come out. For sure. Yeah. Okay, we have to stop here from Arif. There's obviously a bigger discussion. We can, if anyone wants, you can come over to me. We can talk about it later.